Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Monday morning to you, everybody. We come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. Hopefully you guys had a wonderful holiday weekend filled with food and family and things to give thanks for. And a little football on the side. Phil Savage is going to join us, analyst for the Crimson Tide Radio Network. We got to talk about what Auburn did to Alabama on Saturday, winning the Iron Bowl in impressive fashion. You want a statistic? Here is a stat. I first saw this, read it, reread it, doubted it, went back to research, researched it, still doubted it, ran it by James Ward, executive producer of Sunday Morning Football yesterday, had him research it, still doubted it, saw it run on television, still doubted it, and then finally came around when I said, okay, everybody says this is a thing. Nick Saban's never beaten a good Auburn team. Nick Saban is 0-7 against Auburn when Auburn has 9 wins in that season. Nick Saban lost 3 times to Auburn at LSU and now 4 times at Alabama. And each of those times, Auburn finished with 9 wins or more. Saban crushes Auburn when Auburn's not very good. But it's not like Saban is 4-3 or 3-4 or 2-5. He is 0-7 when Auburn is 9 wins or better. That's amazing. I didn't think he had lost to 7 times to Auburn his entire career, let alone be 0-7 every time that they're decent. This year it happened again. That should have been the precursor to thinking it was a little weird that Alabama was the favorite on the road when Alabama hadn't exactly looked great recently and Auburn had throttled Georgia just 2 weeks earlier. Nobody wants to play the Tigers right now, and that includes Georgia again. You think the Bulldogs want that rematch? Oh, boy. That's coming up in Atlanta, SEC title game on Saturday. We'll talk a lot about that game, a lot about the college football playoff rankings, a lot about what will happen. Phil Savage will talk about it coming up here in about 15 minutes from now. On Thanksgiving, oh, I was full. Oh, I was feeling good. Half my side of the family is Italian, and so what we do on Thanksgiving is have the turkey, have the stuffing, have the mashed potatoes, have the gravy, have it all. And then my Aunt Deborah and Grandma on that side makes the meatballs and the tomato sauce and the eggplant parm from Uncle Frankie and the lasagna and the brajol. And so you have everything in there, and it's hard to decide what to do. You need to be strategic. Some will say, DA, what do you do? I'll tell you what I do. I do not go in with a hard plan. I go, and I see what I see, and I say, let me make a decision. I'm going to come to the line of scrimmage, read the defense, and then make my play call. And if I need to audible, I can audible. I can keep going back to what I just did. I can step aside, change it up. What I know I'm not going to do is script my first 15 plays. I think that's wrong. I think that's silly. I think that's stubborn. You got to read the defense, see what is there, and then make your decision. What I did was first play was half and half. Second plate, more Italian. Third plate, more traditional. Late night, half and half again. Four plates, Mraz. You'd be proud.
Four plates.
Now, that's spread out over. We started eating at about 3 o'clock, probably finished around 8 o'clock with my fourth plate. So that's about 5 hours.
Okay. All right. So it's there for the whole time.
Yeah.
Then that's a good plan by your family. Usually, you know, whatever's out is out for an hour at a time with us. I don't get a choice of everything over an 8-hour period.
I heard that you had only had one plate, which is a huge upset.
One plate of dinner. I did pick it some antipasto, of course. But, yeah, only one plate of dinner. I don't know. I wasn't overly bearingly hungry, if you will.
Well, you had come off doing the overnights, which we'll discuss in greater detail as we make our way through the week, as Mraz had his debut hosting job Thursday morning, Thanksgiving morning. But your body clock was probably ruined the same way it was for all of us for the 2 years that we did overnights, when it basically turns you into some type of cyborg.
I was totally thrown off, and I would say within 45 minutes of me waking up after doing an overnight, I was put in front of salami, provolone, and all of that. Now, there was no buffer period watching the parade for me.
So it brings us to the football as we are eating, and thanks to the Cowboys for not showing up. That was fun, because it meant now I had to speak to my family. So thanks for nothing, Dallas. You know, football's such a good distraction from having to talk to the people that you don't want to talk about or talk to at Thanksgiving. Oh, what's the score of the game? It's a blowout. Yeah, why don't we talk about your hip replacement again? Oh, yeah, let's talk about traffic again. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, kill me now. So thanks, Dallas, for nothing. Chargers win 28-6. Cowboys are sinking like a rock.
Rolling to your left. Dangerous throw. Anticipated picked off. Desmond King. One-on-one against the quarterback. Beats Prescott inside. Bosa trailing as a blocker. And King is off to the races with an escort. He'll sprint it all the way back. 88 yards into the end zone. Touchdown.
In each of the games, we were in position at halftime. In a really good position to challenge. And then in each of the games, we just didn't do what we needed to do in the second half. They were able to sustain drives and cash in on drives, and we weren't able to match those. And happened different ways in each of the games, but that is the recurring theme.
We were in position. We were really close. We just couldn't figure out the offense.
It was 3-0 at the half. 3-0, which felft like 20-0, because the Cowboys' offense stinks without Ezekiel Elliott, Tyron Smith, and a quarterback that can carry things. I'll be the first to admit I was wrong on Dak Prescott. I thought when you lose Ezekiel Elliott, it'll be okay. It's not like Alfred Morris or anybody else is going to be the equivalent, but I thought that Dak could hold his own. My God, was Dak Prescott terrible on Thursday? 179 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, sacked twice. Oy! That was Westwood 1 on the call and Jason Garrett after the game. Jerry Jones says that Jason Garrett is not at risk of losing his job. You may ask yourself, well, why? Why? I'll tell you why. Because in the Cowboys organization, being friends, being an ally, being trustworthy is all that matters. Jerry Jones loves Tony Romo. Why? Because Romo was an extension of his family. Romo would vacation with the Jones family. Romo would dinner with the Jones family. Romo was a part of the organization in kind of a non-employer-employee way, more, I would say, in a little bit of a dysfunctional way. I would, because in football, end of the day, it's about wins and losses. I'm sorry, we'd like to think it's about more. We'd like to think it's about loyalty and bonds, but really it's about wins and losses. And Tony Romo got the benefit of the doubt from the organization because he was in the inner sanctum. Same thing with Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett serves two purposes for the Jones family, specifically Jarrah. Number one, he can be pushed around. Jason Garrett is not headstrong. Garrett is not a guy that's going to bark at Jerry. Jason Garrett doesn't have a mind of his own. Jason Garrett is easily pushed around and will not fight back. So he's perfect in that way because that's exactly what Jerry wants to do, have control over his coaches. Who are the two most successful coaches, may I ask, over the last 30 years since Jerry Jones has owned the team? I will tell you. Number one, Jimmy Johnson. Number two, Bill Parcells. What do they both have in common? They both left. Why? They both left because Jerry wanted to push them around, and they said, no. No. You can do that to Wade Phillips. You can do that to Chan Gailey. You can do that to Jason Garrett, but you won't do it to me. See ya! And Jimmy left. And Bill left. And those are the two most successful coaches in that 30-year period since Jarrah owned the team. Jason Garrett can be pushed around, number one. That helps his cause. He's part of the inner sanctum. And so he's not going to get fired. He's easily controllable. And he dinners with the Joneses. And that's why you know the Cowboys will never win anything as long as Jerry is still calling the shots. I have hope that Stephen Jones has more of a distance. I have hope that he has more of a distance in terms of making the right moves. Stephen Jones was the guy in the draft party, the draft war room, saying, we're not going after Johnny Manziel. We're not going after rah-rah guys, star guys, guys that sell jerseys. We're drafting offensive linemen. It ain't sexy, everybody, but this is what we're doing. And this is why the Cowboys have gotten back to actually being respectable and last year went to the playoffs at 13-3. But as long as Jerry has his way, this thing is going to be forever dysfunctional. And he's going to keep Jason Garrett around. And look, I'm not blaming Jason Garrett for Zeke being injured, Tyron Smith being injured, Sean Lee being injured. That's not his fault. But does Jason Garrett strike you as the type of coach that can overcome those types of losses? Of course not. He's a mediocre, middling coach. Would you guys mind bringing up Jason Garrett's playoff record? Would you mind bringing up maybe his overall win-loss record? Jason Garrett is perfectly mediocre. In fact, he's more than that. He's subpar. If you listed all 32 head coaches in the NFL, I would say Jason Garrett would not be in the top half, the top 16.
We were in position at halftime.
We were in position at halftime. We were getting shut out 3-0. And then at the end of the game, we decided not to tackle anybody. That was fun to watch on Thanksgiving, huh? Oh, look, the Cowboys have just flat out quit. Nice. Well, that's great. Cool. Keenan Allen catches a pass, goes 42 yards. Six different guys tried to avoid tackling him. Ooh, you got him, right? Oh, no, you got him. Oh, you got him. Nice. Cowboys, disaster.
Jason Garrett is a mere 1-2 in 7 years as head coach.
7 years. He's been to the playoffs twice.
1-2, and his one win
was Fugazi.
Right. Was the game versus the Lions.
Was the phantom flag that he should have lost. Now, the flip side is that the Dez catch was probably a good catch, so they kind of got robbed there. But his one win is totally a phony win because that flag should not have been picked up, and the phantom flag ended up helping the Cowboys, hurting the Lions.
He's only 11 games over in 7 years as head coach.
11 games over in 7 years. Last year, he was 10 games over. He's 7 games over for his career. So outside of last season, he's 3 games under 500.
Yeah, 3-8-8, so 12-4, a 4-12, a 13-3, and then this year.
I mean, think about that. He was 10 games over 500 last year. For his career, he's 7 games over 500. Now, I know the Romo, Brandon Whedon debacle hurts his win-loss record, but let's face it. Jason Garrett is a perfectly mediocre to subpar head coach. And he should get fired, but He's friends with the owner.
I don't know. I have no answers. We were in position. We were only down 3-0 at halftime, and then my whole team quit. Phil Savage will join us to talk about the Iron Bowl. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
Eagle fans, we can hear you.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Happy Monday. Not a happy Monday for Alabama, Nick Saban, and Tide fan. They've got to wait to see if chaos erupts this upcoming weekend, a championship weekend, to see if a door is open for Alabama to slip in there into the college football playoff. This would be the first playoff without the Crimson Tide. Joining us here on the show is our friend Phil Savage. He is the Senior Bowl Executive Director. He's also a member of the Crimson Tide Radio Network as color analyst and author of Fourth and Goal Every Day, about Alabama's pursuit of perfection under Nick Saban. They were far from perfect on Saturday, and Phil joins us now. Phil, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Hope you're well.
I am. Thanks so much. Hopefully you had a nice holiday. And I go back to your keys to this game before it was played. And one of the things you said was turnovers. For Alabama, on the road, control the football. Do not turn the football over. And Alabama was uncharacteristically sloppy in this game. How do you figure that?
Yeah, they really were. And I tell you, going to Auburn, especially when there's a lot at stake, and of course, all the marbles were on the table, so to speak, for the SEC West, but it is an elevated stadium with crowd noise. It's very difficult to keep your poise in the noise. That was my catchphrase in every interview that I did in advance of the game. And, you know, for whatever reason, Alabama was not at their best. They had, of course, a lost fumble, but then the botched field goal attempt that would have drawn the score to 20-17 had it been successful. The snaps down on the ground, of course, the second one did not count. Bama gets a reprieve with 4th and 4. They come up inches short on the conversion. It was one of the worst performances that they've had. I've been on the radio now. This is my 9th season. I had to go all the way back to 2007 when they had, if you want to call it that, failures in all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams. Usually, if they have a failure in one area, the other two areas play well, and they're able to overcome those negatives.
So how do we account for that? Do you think it was being on the road in that environment? Was it inexperience, youth? Alabama had really not been in a big-time game this season. We know that most of the SEC West was down this year. How do we account for how they played on Saturday?
Yeah, I think part of it, of course, Bama, I felt like, would have some confidence because of what happened at Mississippi State a few weeks earlier. They had come from behind in the fourth quarter, a very noisy situation. But there was no carryover into Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I think you have to give a lot of credit to Auburn, too. They played extremely well. They stuck to their game plan, which was to pound Kerryon Johnson really between the tackles. He carried it 30 times. And then also to try to throw the football down the field. They tested Alabama. Although they didn't hit a lot of deep passes, they still made Alabama defend the full width and depth of the field. That's really the Gus Malzahn offense at its core. And, again, Auburn's defense was able to be very effective on third down. Bama ended up 3rd and 11 on third down. But for much of the game, they were 0-for until the last two drives of the contest. In the meantime, Auburn ended up 9-for-18. But at one point, they were 9-for-15. Before Bama got some stops at the end of the game when Auburn was really up by 12 points at that time.
Phil Savage of the Crimson Tide Radio Network joins us here on the show. So in your mind, the biggest reason that Alabama was uncharacteristically sloppy in this game is more to do with what Auburn did, that this was basically, you got to factor in how good the Tigers played.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of it. We saw the same thing happen to Georgia when they went into Jordan-Hare as the number one team a few weeks back. They did not play very good football. Auburn played exceptionally well. It was a blowout, 40-17. Alabama, on the other hand, was not at their best. Auburn played well. And again, it really came down to the third down efficiency for both teams. Auburn, because of the success on third down, they kept the ball, DA, 36 minutes. Bama only had possession about 24 minutes in that game. Very uncharacteristic of the Tide. Typically, they're the ones that control the time of possession and maintain possession of the football. Auburn was able to shorten the game with the success of their offense. In other words, Bama didn't get a ton of chances, and when they did, they were certainly out of whack. And I think a lot of it had to do with the crowd noise and also Auburn's front four. They have a tremendous defensive line, and I thought although Alabama had some success running the football, I thought the pass rush bothered Alabama as well.
Give me the road that has to open up. What has to happen for Alabama to make the college football playoff?
Yeah, we laid this out immediately after the game on our post-game show because the first thought is, well, Bama's probably out of it. Well, not just yet. The door's not completely closed. I think the reality is that the ACC winner, Clemson, and Miami, they're in. The winner of the SEC, Auburn or Georgia, they're in. So that leaves two more spots. I think you have to look at the two lost teams that are in those games, TCU against Oklahoma, Ohio State against Wisconsin. If either could pull the upset or both could pull the upset, then I think obviously the committee has to choose between a one-loss Alabama and a two-loss conference champion, and then that would be the debate. You take Alabama at 11-1, or TCU or Ohio State with two losses, although they win their conference title. So that's going to be the debate. The reality is Alabama's got a strong resume behind them in terms of the history. They've been in the playoff three times. They've been the number one team in the country for the better part of 2 years. Does any of that count or matter? Technically, it doesn't. But I do think that the Alabama brand does carry some weight when it comes down to these boardrooms.
Yep, there is a door open. There's no doubt for Alabama if a couple of things happen for them. Let me ask you about the upcoming SEC title game. As you alluded to, it was a game that I was actually at Jordan-Hare a couple of weeks ago. Auburn smashed Georgia the first time around. Is there a way that Georgia can return the favor? Can the Bulldogs, can you foresee them being able to beat Auburn, or is this just a really bad matchup for the Bulldogs?
Well, I think it's a tough matchup for Georgia because Jake Fromm, the true freshman quarterback, now he will gain some experience having been on the field with Auburn, but he's not really a runner. He's not a dual threat quarterback. He's more of a pocket passer. So Georgia's going to have to get him on the move and change his launching point because this Auburn pass rush is formidable. And what Georgia's really got to do is they've got to be able to run the football better and control the clock themselves. I think they've got to play keep away from this Auburn offense. Now, Auburn has Kerryon Johnson coming off of this apparent shoulder injury. He left the Alabama game late. It's up for debate as to whether he will be up or down next Saturday in Atlanta. If he's down, that really changes the whole complexion of Auburn's offense because, remember, Cameron Petway is also out with a fractured scapula. So the injury to Johnson is very, very important as it pertains to this game. And for the Georgia defense, you know, again, I think everything starts with stopping Auburn's run game and being able to tackle out in space. We saw Auburn throw the ball outside a bunch Saturday to just see if Bama could tackle them, get them on the ground out in the open grass. It was relatively successful, especially with 6-7 yard gains on first down. And when Auburn's effective on first down, they're a very difficult offense to stop.
Phil Savage, member of the Crimson Tide Radio Network, executive director of the Senior Bowl. You should follow him on Twitter at Senior Bowl Phil and check out his book, Fourth and Goal Every Day. It's Alabama's Relentless Pursuit of Perfection and how they've won four national titles since 2009 under Nick Saban. The book, again, is Fourth and Goal Every Day. Phil is the author. Phil, always good to catch up, buddy. Thanks so much.
All right, D.A., I appreciate the time. Thank you, bud.
Phil Savage joining us today here on the show. Look, I thought that Auburn would pull the trick. I picked them to win last week on the show, but I didn't think we'd see Alabama play that sloppy. And I think Phil is right. A lot of that has to do with how well Auburn played, and that crowd was crazy. Man, this is why all college football games should be played on campus. I mean, Saturday was such a beautiful thing. That crowd, that energy, that atmosphere. Auburn, Alabama in the Georgia Dome. Auburn, Alabama in Jerry World. Auburn, Alabama, even in Pasadena. Doesn't feel like that. And I know that there's a lot of money to be had with these non-traditional matchups early in the season, and I like seeing them. Hey, having Alabama play Florida State in week one is better than not having Alabama play Florida State. But it's just so different when it's not on campus. And that had a huge deal. That was a huge part of that. I mean, Alabama look rattled. Auburn's a tough matchup for them. We just talked about the X and O's part. But looking at the mistakes, you can't help but think that's a neutral field, or if it's in Tuscaloosa, some, if not all, of those mistakes don't happen to Alabama. Hell of a win by the Tigers and War Damn Eagle going into the SEC title game, and I don't like what I see coming up for Georgia. I think they're getting hit by a freight train coming up on Saturday at 4 o'clock Eastern. On CBS.
Well, I feel good, and I'm doing well.
When we come back, we've got your sound check, your best audio of the day. Who wouldn't want to hear from DeShone Kizer as we talk more about a Browns loss again, and Gronk discussing riding horses and celebrating touchdowns. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
Here was Kadri doing his best Andrew Bogish with us.
CAA, college football, land.
The way he says land, I've heard you kind of pull that off.
I hope I sound that articulate.
CAA land?
Yeah.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Full episodes of The DA available on iTunes. If you missed anything or want to hear it again, simply go to iTunes, search DA and CBS. And we'll get you hooked up, download it for free, all episodes in their entirety available for the DA show. Coming up next hour, who has won the college football coaching carousel? And after last night's getting by the hair to their chinny chin chin, can the Pittsburgh Steelers legitimately knock off the Patriots next week or in the playoffs? We'll talk about all those things coming up next hour on the show. As always, hit me up at 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. A lot of Vols fans weighing in on the Greg Schiano nightmare. That I say it's a nightmare because I think from a school perspective, a hiring of a coach and having to immediately backtrack is bad for that program. Because trying to get good coaches to come to Knoxville when they see the administration do a complete 180 based on social media reaction is going to scare good coaches away. Who knows who ends up taking this job? But I think the way that this went down is a bad look for Tennessee. The fans spoke. The fans have spoken. And they didn't want Greg Schiano for a couple of reasons. Either he wasn't a very good football coach, he wasn't a very good fit, or because of his connection to Penn State, or maybe all of the above. You know, Butch Jones just got run out of town because Butch Jones was terrible with the media, terrible with the public. And Schiano looked a lot like that. Schiano sounded a lot like that. People didn't want Butch Jones again. Nobody wanted to go down that road again. And so Vols fans revolted. And they got their wish. But ultimately, it's not a good look for the administration. Because here you have an athletic director making a decision, hiring a coach, and then either not realizing at all how the fan base feels, which is bad. You should have some type of connection to it. Especially if you're going to make a decision based on it, or doesn't have the conviction to go along with his initial gut reaction. Either one of those things is bad. Corey tweets, I bet people did justify the mediocre hire with the Penn State stuff, but I do think a majority took ethical reasons after some questionable things with Butch and sexual assault came up. And that is true, and that is fair, that the Tennessee Athletic Department has already had sexual assault on their docket, and nobody wants to walk down that path again. I would hope that even if it was Urban Meyer or Nick Saban, if they were connected to Penn State, people would have to say that outcry. I wonder. I kind of think we overlook a lot for winning, and you rationalize a lot. Bad behavior with coaches, Bobby Petrino, players, domestic violence, and other things, recruits. But the end of the day, Vol Nation rose up. Vols fans rose up and said, we don't want this guy, and UT had to backtrack. But now, who are you going to get that will trust you as an administration? That's what I want to know. Where is the guy that's going, yeah, I want to work for that team. I want to work for that AD. I'm going to work for that guy. Because that guy hired the wrong guy and had to do a full 180 and get embarrassed while doing it. I mean, you've got protests on campus because of a college football head coach hire. You couldn't have got it more wrong. You could not have gotten it more wrong. You had no feel for how the fan base is going to react. Mike is in Tennessee, listening on 640 to CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, D.A., how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Thank you.
Good. What's going on?
You're exactly right. The Tennessee fans went from momentary jubilation from hearing that we had gotten a former Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach to picking up the torches and pitchforks and heading right to Neyland Stadium yesterday. And I think it was a bad move on Curry's part because he is merely a puppeteer for Haslam, who has run the Browns organization into the ground. But the Tennessee fans are really just showing the boosters that they're not going to put up with the mediocrity that they were given. It's not even so much his record, but the contingency of his character. And Tennessee's had too many problems with the characters of their former employees.
Yeah, I think that's all fair, Mike. And as I mentioned in the outset of the show, in the cold open, this is not a big loss for Tennessee. I think you can hire a coach that can do what Schiano could do. Schiano did have a great run at Rutgers, and you can't take that away from him. That was a great run, what he was able to accomplish. I don't think it's a huge coaching loss for Tennessee. I just think it's a bad look for Tennessee to be that tone deaf towards your fans. And know that fans can get a guy fired on the day he was hired. Mike is next up in Virginia, listening on 640 to CBS Sports Radio. Hey, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Kind of going to go along that last guy said, except for the fact that, could you imagine a competitive recruiter going into a home with a Mike McQuarrie a deposition from a grand jury that said that Greg Schiano knew of the abuse going on, and they using that against him once Schiano got the job?
Well, here's the thing, Mike. When it comes to the Penn State stuff, it's still hard for me to emotionally wrap my head around what happened because it's so awful. And to think that those crimes happened, the ugliest crimes in college athletics history, because a guy was protected within those walls via football, is so sickening, it's impossible to even describe. But if it was such a death knell, if it was such a scarlet letter to be associated with Penn State, how is Penn State this good? And Penn State was an upset away from playing in the Big Ten championship game. Penn State could have been in the playoff last year. If you're talking about negative recruiting, why doesn't everybody in the Big Ten go, you don't want to go to Penn State? You remember what happened there. I mean, this idea that there's this scarlet letter on Greg Schiano is like, well, there should be a scarlet letter on that entire program. They're competing for the playoff already. It's been only 5 years. James Franklin is recruiting his tail off. How is everybody not going into those homes of those kids and going, you can't play there. Watch this documentary. You can't play there. Read this article. Read this deposition. So I can't hold Greg Schiano to a higher standard than I do the actual program where that evil happened. Let's get to your sound check, your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Browns lose again. Browns lose again. DeShone Kizer.
When you, you know, mandate a guy, a rookie quarterback in this league, all you're looking for are the small wins. Well, I think we're done with small wins now. It's about getting out there in this last five games of the season and doing whatever it takes just to put a victory up on the board.
Yeah, Browns aren't going to win a football game. Nope. They're at the Chargers, loss. Home to the Packers, loss, even without Aaron Rodgers. At the Bears, loss. At the Steelers, loss. Unless Pittsburgh rests everybody because they're going into the playoffs and somehow they choked away the bye, there's no way that the Browns will win any football games. They're going 0-16. And they were 1-15 last year, which means this could be the worst football team we've ever seen. And that included the expansion Buccaneers in 1976 because the 76 and 77 Buccaneers went 0-14, then 0-12, but won their last two games in 77, which means this could be the worst two-year stretch of any football team ever. Now, this is the worst football team we've ever seen. The Browns are going 0-16. Mraz, can you find a W there? Maybe the Packers at home if Brett Hundley shows up like Brett Hundley 2 weeks ago, but after what we saw last night, I don't think that's going to happen.
They could beat the Packers. They could beat the Bears. They did beat the Chargers last year, ironically, and that comes rolling in this week.
But it was at home. This one this year is on the road in L.A. They're not going to win that football game.
How many people are
going
to be at that game, by the way? It's been all road fans at Charger games.
Seriously. And then that Bears game is on the road as well. I mean, they're not much worse, I would say, than the Bears potentially because the Bears are really bad. But are they going to win a road game? I highly doubt that.
There has been nobody in NFL history to regress after a 1-15 year.
Right.
They could do that.
That's right. Derek Carr on the fight between Aqib Talib and Michael Crabtree yesterday.
You know, it went to another level. I think we could all feel that. It wasn't just push and shoving kind of thing. I took off over there and just tried to get my guys out of there. You know, just try to get everybody out of there. And it's football, you know, at the same time. It's chippy, man. It's a violent game. And so my hope is that, you know, with what happened, it stays here. You know, we're all about, you know, hey, when certain things go down and we got to do things a certain way, but you know, this is a violent game versus a heated rivalry. And so hopefully everything just stays here today and we can just move on, you know, past this and, you know, be better next time.
That is two frustrated teams with seasons that didn't go their way. And the AFC West used to be looked at as one of the best divisions in football. Right now, it's one of the worst divisions in football. And we could have a sub-500 team win the division because the Chiefs are trying to choke it away. And the Chargers are still sub-500, but look like the best team in that division. Raiders win 21-14. Broncos are 3-8, 0-5 away from home. Raiders are 5-6. And finally, Gronk, after having Brandon Cooks ride him like a horse as his touchdown celebration.
We got yelled at. We're not allowed to talk about celebrations. That's what we got told, but I kind of want to talk about it. But I kind of don't because I'll get in trouble. So I don't know what to do. So it just happened on the spot. It wasn't planned. We'll just keep it there.
You know, I'm kind of over the touchdown celebrations at this point. I'm kind of over them, and here's why. They're feeling less and less authentic. They're feeling more and more planned and more scripted. And there's only so much scripting of celebrations I can stomach. Like, if it's a really, really good one and it's really creative, okay. But I kind of feel like we're now just small iterations of what we've already seen. I mean, what's the most creative one we've seen this year?
It ain't any of these ones the Eagles are doing, because that is so not funny at this point.
The duck, duck, goose?
I guess hide and seek with the Steelers was kind of cool. I think the NFL was onto something. They gave the players this, hoping the fans would eventually turn the NFL's way and hate the celebration, which I think could be happening.
You think this is reverse psychology?
I think it could have been reverse psychology, because I'm watching now and I'm going, all right, enough. Enough. Guy in the Chiefs end zone posed for a team picture. I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, you know, I love Billy White Shoes Johnson. I love the Dion strut and dance. I'm all about cool celebrations. Vi Sikahama punching the goalpost. There's cool ones, but these, I don't know. They just are like choreographed team-wide silliness. And I guess early it was kind of cool, and now it's kind of tired.
The Eagles fell like bowling pins yesterday. And I had to read people on Twitter go, how awesome was that? It was so stupid.
What about the electric slide?
I guess.
Yeah.
Boogie, oogie, oogie.
I mean, that's not the same song. That felt a little bit better because it felt like they just did it on the spot. But again, is anybody else with me? It's getting a little tired now. When we come back, who is one? The coaching carousel in college.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.